You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Sigrid Sandstrom. Sigrid, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for hosting me.
We're going to talk about your show, of course, Adonat Ebgi, and it's a beautiful show you put together, so I'm looking forward to discussing this. So to begin with, there's a very interesting aspect to this work, which, of course, is your process, right? It seems that you have an unusual process for working on these. So to begin with, how do these works start, these paintings start? Is there a sketch, or how do you begin before you even start painting?
Yeah, they are very process-oriented, and I actually see them maybe more as sketches in and of themselves. So I don't have any sketches beforehand whatsoever, and I start from a blank slate or an empty canvas, and I normally just a random pour or an imprint of something that I dipped into paint, and from there I work my way out of the painting, so to speak, and for a while.
So let's talk about that.
They are some almost like a skeleton of sorts to the paintings. Instead of using a sketch, I have these marks that I that are guiding me towards something, but I have no preconceived idea or any kind of notion of where the painting is going, which is at times incredibly frustrating, but it's also still vastly fascinating that I'm actually quite lost in the process, and I want them to stay open like that. I think if I'm lost in that process, maybe some of that is promising some kind of openness as the end result of the painting. It's open. It's not locked into a very specific one way of looking at it.
And is that why the title or the word Janus, I think of that as two faces.
Yeah, Janus was
that.
For the first show, and this particular show with Anat is called Penumbra. And I think Janus was the last show with Anat a few years ago, and then I had double-sided paintings. So I showed two faces, you would say, the back and the front of a painting. And I do some of that. In this current show in New York with her, there is a diptych that's basically the back of a painting. So the front is hidden and the back is the new face. So that's one way, and penumbra is maybe indicating the kind of atmosphere that I'm looking for. It's a sort of something that's more amorphous, like a weather or a time of the day, or without being overtly romantic, but quite matter of fact, that the process is fluid and in transit, and hopefully the kind of stagnated image has some reminiscence of that quality of the fluidity or the ambiguity, even in what type of image that will sort of unfold or even almost like develop, because it's a paint them flat. And that way the pigments are sediment and it dries from a very fluid, watery, consistent into an image. So, and I don't have much control each time the next day I come or a few hours later. It's every single time they've dried a little different than I expected. So that type of chance, if you so will is very important part of becoming almost like the tool to have something to react against, or how to build an image through these kind of layers of, or in instances of information I didn't know would go into the painting.
Yeah, you know, I like that. That makes sense. And between these two shows, yeah, I mentioned Janice because I had seen that show, and also Penumbra. But in Penumbra, there is less of the kind of you're interested in one surface, but in the which seems a big part mm-hmm. of your work, the way the paint is absorbed, how it kind of works chemically. That there are two sides to the painting in some pieces here, right? But how it's hung seems so important to
yes.
you. This show, Penumbra, mm-hmm. is hung quite differently than Janice, correct?
Yeah. Well, I think I always think a lot about if I have the possibility to plan with a site in mind. They're never site specific because they're, you know, they're autonomous painting objects, definitely. But when I paint them, I have a specific place in mind. And for instance, the current show in New York is a very elongated, almost like a, it's not as, well, it's like a railroad room, although the scale is grander than a railroad apartment, but it's very elongated. So it's a long wall that you're walking by to get to the further back in the gallery, and I wanted to make use of the kind of possibility I had of like you walk by the painting before you maybe step back and see an overall. In this case, there are actually then in individual paintings that are just hung very close to each other. It's not one piece. It's different paintings, but they sort of spill over into each other and jump. Things are happening in some paintings, certain colors or a gesture that are sort of reappearing in at a later painting down the line, so to speak. Mm. And so I think that was really interesting because I very much see of my paintings that continuations, or they are kind of extended family, that just one thing leads to the next, like a snowball down the road, down the hill. And to have those actually bounce off of each other to that extreme was interesting to just to try out as a sort of strategy. But earlier, for instance, the two-sided paintings, they all started with that. I had a very, very huge gallery or museum space where you were forced to turn around at the end of the also quite long space. And then I just realized that I do very much sometimes at earlier chose to show a former backside of a painting that will become the front. But here I finally then could actually hang them free just maybe at an inch above the ground, so they were sort of floating, floating in space and almost like a forest of paintings that you would walk yourself through. And that way you had a very quiet intro to the exhibition with the backsides that are usually sort of soft and hazy or more like a mirage, something you faintly see. You don't, it's sort of muted, very quiet. Then you walk around and you turn around and there's a very actually quite not extreme but very colorful and quite quite a lot of power in the sort of stark colors. It's a very different experience of walking back, vivid sort of dancing in your face appearance. So I didn't have the chance to try it out. I have small studio, but so that was maybe the biggest part of the chance then, like let's see what happens when in the hanging. And it sort of definitely it was way beyond my whatever assumptions that I had in my little cardboard model. It did have the effect that I was sort of, and beyond that I was hoping for. So I do always, if I can, work with the site in mind. And I make models and I make, photograph them with my phone to kind of imagine, and I'm not really using SketchUp, and more almost like an analog, like a dollhouse, like you really sort of physically have the little model. But at the same time, never ever worked out exactly like the model. And in this show that's up now at Anat Ebgi in New York, we introduced a few paintings that were not part to be part, were not supposed to be part of this long series, because I saw them initially as quite in more like solitary pieces. It had a more of a very frontal appearance, something I didn't know that it would make sense to walk by and see from the side, but suddenly it made a lot of sense in the hanging to infuse a few different types of vistas or and add some surprise in the actual hanging, not just surprise me in the making, so to speak, in the actual painting.
That's so interesting. The surface themselves are very beautiful in these, the colors, the forms. To go back a little bit into your process, you talked about how they began, but there's a number of things happening here, right? You said you're using pigments, but you're also pressing things onto the canvas, like a type of printmaking almost. Can you tell me a little bit about the materials and how the pigment, the paint, is getting onto the canvas?
Yeah, I paint with very, very diluted acrylics. Sometimes I also use a vinyl paint, but it's very diluted. So it's almost like just a waterly consistency, like almost like you would dye your painting rather than paint with a kind of physical body of paint. So the paint sort of these days, it seeks into the primed raw canvas. And I had painted it for many years on panel, and maybe this is the one of the few consistencies in my practice ever since graduate school. I have worked with water-based paint. It has been casein and also kind of paracasein that we used for stage sets. It's been gouache, and then later I started with, I mean, I can go very technical with brands, et cetera, but the kind of flat acrylics that don't have their shiny, plasticky consistency or surface. And then I work with some paints that have silicate or mica, so that the kind of sort of textures of the pigments are, they evaporate to the top, sits on the top of the canvas when they dry, but they're not really visible when I paint. So that's another little sort of effect, that some of the pigments sort of come closer to the forefront in the drying process. The printmaking part, I had worked on panel forever, and then I was doing a residency outside Paris, and I didn't have access to panels for those few months. But I went to this amazing art supply store that had thousands and thousands of rolls, different types of canvases. This is 10 years ago now. Then I finally found a type of canvas that was absolutely flat like paper, and I sort of tumbled my way back into canvas again. And I started print, but at that time, almost like a very one-to-one, almost philosophical question, like what is canvas and what is this sort of canvas? What is textile? If I use textile to textile, so I used my leftover rugs, the kind of cloths and press them just to see. I said, I don't know, just what happens. And then I realized that these are almost indexical, sort of absolute imprints. They're almost photographical in that sense, that I really got interested in that kind of exact other part of them, how would I say them? The absence of something very concrete, like it could be plastic or the cotton cloth or all kinds of flat surfaces that I would then use as monoprints, basically. The very first ones I did with my leftover water, like what kind of residue, like old brown water that I had in my studio. So started at that leftover part. And then the ones that I've, since 2020, I worked on raw canvas, because then I found myself back in the States, and we don't have as much canvas here in Europe. People mostly work on linen. So I was like, oh, my raw canvas. And I just started working, trying out. And then I realized that if I didn't prime it so many, just a thin prime, some of it would seep through and I could work with that. So it's usually a place, not just for the exhibition, but wherever I am in terms of materials, also inform the choices I make. Of course, that's very sort of obvious, but that gives new fuel to the to the practice.
Absolutely.
Materials, like depending on where you are, and
you know, as opposed to Janice, Penumbra has a different kind of imagery, where it feels like there's different content here, that you're exploring something a little bit different. And is there a kind of general theme or content you're after? Penumbra is, of course, you know, also astronomical phenomena, but is there... in producing this body of work, as opposed to Janice, which has different types of compositions, a kind of world you're looking at, or even a narrative,
I think they're not all of them, but for the most part, they're filling the canvas to a larger extent. They're more sort of overwhelming in a way, both in kind of exuberant colors, but also how the colors or the paint is sort of floating over, that it takes over the more or less the entire canvas. And so I think they're maybe just a different mood. And I had made a show in Tokyo with another gallery, Paratone Gallery, and I had thought a lot about dusk, which was the title of that show. It was this past January, and the absence of light and what it does, you know, now here it's sort of never really bright. It's this constant waiting for some kind of gray something in the middle of the day. So this type of, that you're really consumed by or surrounded by a certain type of environment, atmospherically, and but also symbolically and politically, maybe that it has a, that you can't see through. There's something that's sort of closing in, and but as a contrast to that, this show Penumbra also has these very bright colors, and they are very, how would I say, They are for one sort of a very clear decision of mine. Like I would like to use this type of violet and pink and turquoise. It was a very active decision, because I went to see, I'd never been to the San Marco convent in Florence, and I went to see with my friend Karen Olivier, also an artist. We went to visit Florence to see this convent, and it was so overwhelming. I've always loved Fra Angelico, but to see the whole convent where each monk would have his individual little fresque in the cell, and the kind of layout of the monastery itself was just unbelievably breathtaking. And so this kind of late medieval Renaissance painting always been my favorite, Giotto, and also maybe Fra Angelico. I've looked at smaller paintings that are sort of been taken out of their initial context and placed in important museum shows, but to see them in their sort of these frescoes in their original function was just really something. And so I decided I'm going to actually use some of these robe colors, the orange, the violet, and I, so it was almost not paint by numbers, but I had a few hues that I knew I would use, which sort of brightens up the palette quite a bit from how I maybe normally work. And now I was told that there is this very fantastic show, again in Florence, but at the Palazzo, I forgot which the name of the Palazzo Strozzi, maybe, that is on Fra Angelico with it, which, yeah, I actually didn't see. It's up now, so anyways, that's the kind of something that can happen before a show that sort of suddenly overshadows all your or intertwines with the way you're working. So it's quite extremes from the type of Japanese works I was looking at in January to the this late medieval paintings in May. Everything is sort of going into the pot and mixed around. If you, I don't know, something like that.
Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, Fra Angelico is absolutely one of my favorite painters. It's so nice to hear about being inspired by his palette. It's so exciting talking to you about all of this. I hope the listeners will come see the show before it closes. There's links to that here. I want to ask you one more question before we go, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Oh, that's kind of funny because it's going to tie to just what we talked about, but I was unaware of that there is a book from the early 2000s by, I didn't know that Didi Huberman wrote this book on Fra Angelico's paintings, Dissemblance and Figuration, and so I just have it. It's out of print, so I have it on my on my desktop, and I hate reading PDFs, but that's what I'm embarking on. other than that, I listen to immense amounts of audiobooks. I never thought that I would, or knew that I would become an audiobook addict, but now I am. And maybe the last one that I maybe kind of expected for a Scandinavian, but it was the Knausgård new series of the Morning Star, and it's 5 books in that series so far. So that's
the first book that I also that's exciting. That's the first book that I also used as an audiobook. The Knausgård series my struggle, and also Morning Star, the reader. In my struggle, is amazing, award-winning reader, but of course the Knausgård books are very special.
But I don't know, we're out of time, but I listen to the Divine Comedy while I paint, and so then I know that Dante was very close friends with Giotto, and all the, I can kind of go into that world, and I think it's super beautiful, poetic to have this sort of almost, it's like poetry while you paint that, but it's a different way because it's for hours and hours delivered through the audio book. So, yeah.
Yeah, so nice to hear. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure, and I wish you well with this show.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, and thanks for it. It's a great radio show. I just now noticed that it's called something Vasari. Vasari, it's like on, what's the title of your show?
The Lives of the Artists. Yeah.
Yeah. It's in that book that I learned that Giotto and Dante were so good friends.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It all comes to an end, or something. The circle is closing in, or something. But thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Lives of the Artists, Architects, Curators, and more.